Crete is an island. I'll always know where it is, right? Mediterranean. This is what the seashore of Crete looks like. It's kind of a North African Mediterranean type climate. Those are actually palm trees that you see down there on the beach. Now, that's what the seashore looks like. This is what the interior looks like. It's nothing but mountains. This island is shot full of mountains. This kind of landscape that first the Minoan civilization, anybody remember the story of Theseus and Minotaur? The labyrinth under the palace at Gnosis? The bull that went through the labyrinth and Theseus had to outwit him and keep from getting gored to death? That was the Mycenaean mythology. Overlay that's the Mycenaean, which is the Greek mythology. The Greeks took over the island about 1470 B.C., supposedly Zeus, Diana, which they call Artemis, was actually born on this island. Greek society, Greeks did not have a national identity like we do. You know, we call ourselves Americans. Greeks wouldn't call themselves Greeks. They might call themselves Athenians or Spartans or Atticans. But a Greek society did not have morality at all like we think of. With a set of rules of behavior. A Greek was primarily loyal to himself first, then his family, maybe his city, and that's it. Now, there's a story during the first Persian invasion. I believe it was Xerxes first invaded Greece, if you remember ancient Greek history. And one of the Athenian generals that defeated him whipped him up pretty bad. It was a naval battle at Salamis, which is a little bay there between Sparta and Athens. And after the war, the Spartans were so jealous, they manufactured a charge of treason against all the generals. Well, the generals felt no loyalty to their city or their other Greeks. He goes and surrenders to the Persians and lives with them and becomes one of their generals. This is the kind of society that the Greeks had when the church was formed in all little Greek colonies and on island Crete. And of course, that's where Titus is. Who has Titus 1, 12 through 13? We're going to read that first. Remind ourselves of that. All right, will you read that out for us, please?
One of the Cretans, a prophet of their own, said, "Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. This testimony is true. Therefore, rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound in the faith, not devoting themselves to Jewish myths and to the commands of people who turn away from the truth."
Now, ordinarily, we would take Satan's lies as a grain of salt. But the fact that Paul, the Apostle Paul, repeats it in the Scripture leads us to believe that we should give it more weight, that this is an actual description of the people that church is built out of. Something else you have to understand, most of Greek society, not just a lot, but most of it, were slaves. There was a census held in Attica. We actually had the numbers. They had 21,000 citizens, 10,000 medics. The medics would be, they're not full citizens. They were tradesmen. They were foreigners that moved there. So you had 21,000 citizens that could vote, 10,000 medics that couldn't, and 400,000 slaves. It was very common for all but the very poorest people to have at least one or two slaves. Now, slavery at this time, as Americans, we're caught up in the antebellum South version of slavery. It wasn't exactly the same thing. Slavery has advantages to these people. A lot of them were prisoners of war. Instead of being executed, became slaves. A lot of them, because of debts they couldn't pay, instead of being thrown into prison, where you were not fed in a Greek prison. Yet if somebody bring you food, there was no commissary in a Greek prison. Instead of doing that, they became slaves. You had to be taken care of if you were a slave. If you're one of the medics and you didn't make enough money selling your pots or your pans or wherever you did, you starved to death. The slaves were at least fed, were at least housed, were at least taken care of nominally. The idea of someone's a child starving on the curb, the idea of feeding that child would not occur to a Greek citizen. That was not part of their society because they were loyal to themselves first, then their family. So the very nature of the faith that they are now learning in a Christian church is totally foreign to them. Now we're going to read a third chapter of Titus. Remember then, be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey, to be ready for every good work, to speak evil of no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men. For we ourselves were also once foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving various lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy, hateful and hating one another. Now that we've discussed what Greek society was, that becomes a little more apparent, the strength of that language. Exactly what rulers is Paul referring to here, do we think? That's the first thing I want to answer. Is this just the preacher and the deacons in the church, or is this a general instruction to all civil authorities, or is it both? Does anybody want to make a comment on that, Jerry? What do you think? Everybody in here has probably read this verse 1,000 times in their life.
It'd be pretty much what it says, which is principalities and powers, and to obey magistrates, to be ready to every good work.
What is a magistrate? Well, that's a legal term.
Would be a government group of someone.
Civil authority.
Very good. One of the things we're talking about in Awana are the attributes of a Christian. So far we've gone through a Christian is faithful, merciful, truthful, honest. And the next we're coming up with, and don't tell the kids, this is something they have to guess, is that a Christian is obedient. Obedience is a curious thing. Lots of times we talk about obedient child, what we mean is a subservient child. I see these every now and then. You know, a child that causes their parents no problems whatsoever. You know, their bed is perfectly made. Their room is cleaned up. They sit there. They do the homework when they're told to. They tote in the firewood. They take out the trash as they're asked. They wash dishes without being told over and over and over again. Then there are the other kind of children, the ones that you have to drag out under the bed to get them to change their clothes after 3 days. The ones that will tie ropes to the toilet bowl and throw them out the second story window and shinny down. Which is obedient and which it isn't? I thought about this a lot. I don't think obedience is obedience if it's something you're going to do anyway. I think obedience is obedience when you do something that someone else instructs you to do that you don't want to do what normally do. And I'll tell you why I say that. The Cretans here were having a problem with their morality. And they were being instructed, and they didn't like what they were being instructed by. So here they are, having to do all these things that you have to be obedient, you have to speak evil of no one, be peaceable, gentle, showing humility, and they didn't want to do it. Now, I tried to think, as I was sitting in the stand yesterday, how we can put ourselves in the same perspective they were in. And I thought about bringing some things to show, and I thought, no, it's kind of gimmicky. You do that with kids. Y'all are adults. You can picture it in your mind. Okay. I pull up a cage, pull off the shroud. The inside, I have a rattlesnake. And I think our congregation, everyone should start handling this snake, because that's the mark of the apostle. And if you get bit, you will not die. Here, Don, grab a hold of that thing. Now, would some of the leaders in here have a problem with this theology? Pastor George, this is time you're supposed to raise your hand and explain why this is a bad idea. Okay. How about I believe that we have to have all believers baptized after you repent from your sins. Every time. We're going to get in the tank and rebaptize you. Would anybody have a problem with that theology? Mr. Lida. Yes. I have a book that I almost brought, but I didn't, because I bet most of you have. It's a handbook of denominations in the United States, really in the world. It's about this thick. And there are literally hundreds of denominations of people who refuse to humble themselves to those that are over them, so they go and start their own church. That's how disobedience and pride is handled in the Protestant church in the United States of America. In Greece, it was a little bit different. You didn't have a whole lot of places or choice you could do. You're in the church or you're out of the church. Now, somebody find Hebrews 13, 17. Who is that? Good, Mr. McKay. Will you read that out good for us?
Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you.
All right, Romans 13, 1 through 3. Who is that? Jerry, will you read that for him, please?
Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but the power. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same.
That language sounds very familiar with what we have in Titus for much the same reason. And one he's speaking to the Romans, and one he's speaking to the Hebrews, the scattered, and one he's talking to the Cretans. But all of them have problems with their pride. All of them have problems with submitting. We have problems with that today. I'll tell you that right now. I do not like to submit. I do not like being told what to do. I do not like not being the boss. That is not in my nature. It is my instinct to instruct, to command, to tell people, you should be doing it this way. So it's very difficult for me when anybody, for example, the pastor of my church says, no, we're not going to do it that way. I want to say, well, yes, we are. This is why we should. I want to argue. I want to declare my independence of his authority. I do not want to obey. And that's why we have dissension in our ranks. That's why we have problems with one another. It's a very real thing in every church and every society. And here we have it in the Cretans. What, 2,000 years ago? So we can assume it's an old problem. What do we do about it? Yes, Don.
Peter is very clear in 1 Peter 2:13. He says, be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be the emperor as supreme or governors as sent, who are sent to punish those who do evil and praise those who do good. For this is the will of God.
Are y'all familiar with how, I believe it's Ivan the Terrible, brought Christianity to his kingdom in Kiev? He went shopping. Anybody heard this? He went shopping for religion. And he picked Christianity because Christianity declared you had to be subject to the civil rulers. So he was baptized. And he took his Cossacks, surrounded the city, herded everybody out of their town, and the horses literally drove them into the river to baptize them. Now, that's not apocryphal. That really did happen. Other religions, let's take one example, Buddhism, does not have any morals involved. It is about bringing oneself into unity with the universe. Islam, did you know Islam, there is no concept of sin. There is only failing to carry out the ritual to Allah. When we talk about things like lust and lying to a Muslim, those are good ideas, but they're not required of him. And if he does that, that is not sin. Anybody heard of Zoroastrianism? That's an ancient Persian. Yeah, Gene's sitting there nodding his head. It's an ancient Persian religion that in some ways is similar to Christianity. It's one of Satan's decoys they laid. Maitreism was a cult among the Roman soldiers. It's another Persian religion that in some aspects resembles Christianity with a father and a son. All these religions have one thing in common, though. You still do pretty much what you want to do with no consequences. Christianity, being the true faith, has standards and penalties for those standards. And the Cretans were having to get used to this, and they were not liking it too much. Last verse here. For we ourselves were also once foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving various lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy, hateful, and hating one another. I want to be delicate about this. If there's somebody you have to associate with that you do not like, how do you handle that determines if you're being obedient to Christ or not. Yes, Pastor George.
Matthew 5:44 still says we have the obligation to love our enemies, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And Reader's Digest added to that. It said, love your enemies, it will drive them crazy.
Do kind to them. By doing so, you'll pour coals of fire on their head. All right, how about someone in your family? An aunt or an uncle. An uncle has cheated you out of a piece of land, or has cheated you on the price of livestock, or an aunt who is sharp-tongued, fork-tongued, double-tongued, and you discuss this with other family members. John's smiling there. I'm not going to ask for examples here. I'm giving examples. All right, how about somebody in your church? The pastor, instead of preaching a sermon, decides to go to meddling. There you are. You know, have a roast preacher for supper after, or for dinner after church. Now, we like to think, when we read Scripture 2,000 years ago, times were different. You know, we're smarter, we're more experienced, more sophisticated. Granted, we had the Scriptures. The Cretans didn't have what we have to refer to. They did not have 2,000 years tradition. So, of course, we, you know, or superior to them. That's what we kind of think. You know, we see this in science. You know, we got answers now. 200 years ago, they're dummies. We see it in literature. We're cultured now. 400 years ago, they're all barbarians. We see it in politics. We have a modern system now. 1,000 years ago, they're all savages. You know, we're better now. We're improved. But are we really? Who has Ecclesiastes 9:3-4.
This is an evil among all things that are done under the sun, that there is one event unto all. Yea, also the heart of the sons of men is full of evil, and madness is in their heart while they live. And after that they go to the dead. For to him that is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion.
Okay. Ecclesiastes 1:9. Who has that?
I also have that one.
The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done, is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun.
This is the preacher. Well, we thank Solomon, grant, give him the benefit of his wisdom. And I take it from this, and I'm quite confident of this, we are exact same people as it was at creation, as it was in during the flood, before the flood, as it was during the promise, during the Exodus, during the captivity. We aren't any smarter or more sophisticated. Tell me, do you really think some civil engineers today could go out with nothing more than a sheep gut hose, a couple clay pots full of water, and 100,000 slaves and build a pyramid? I couldn't. Do you really think the guy that figures out how to send a rocket and hit Mars is any sharper than the guy that has nothing but a tub full of water to figure out specific densities of metals? Yeah. How about the first guy? I remember my mom used to tell me a tale, you know, the first man that figured out how to cook bacon. And said he was in his house one day. My mom actually told me, said, the barn burned down. So he went outside and he's standing around his wife and his children looking at their barn burned down to the ground, nothing but ashes, and they're feeling sorry for himself. And his wife said, something smells good. So he took a shovel and rake and poked around until he found a pig. And the son says, "That looks good." So he got a knife and started cutting off pieces. And the daughter says, "Let me try that." Well, who's braver, the one that first decided to eat a cooked pig or the one that decided to go up in space? We play games of this all day long. I'm quite confident in stating the same problems that the creations faced in their society we face today in the 21st century. Maybe not personally ourselves. We have a Christian heritage. But the world that we are facing, that we are proselytizing to, that we're witnessing to, they are the exact same thing. The only exception is, instead of chanting for just themselves, their family, they'll also chant USA at sporting events. Yes, Don?
We do have something the others did not have. That's a thing called grace. And the exercise of grace has a great impact on the kinds of things you're talking about.
I'll grant you that. That's a valid point. Everybody hear that? Grace. God's grace. Of course, before Christ, God's grace was not bestowed on anybody except by certain periods for certain times. The Spirit did not descend. We all, as Christians, are uniquely equipped differently than people that lived before the time of Christ. We have to grant that. I'm talking about the world that surrounds us. They are all mad. They're all crazy. They're all liars, full of lust, running to do their own thing instead of the right. Now, Romans 12:16-18. This is how we answer this.
"By the same mind, one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceit. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men."
Same as the second verse just read, to speak evil of no one, to be peaceful, gentle, showing all humility to all men, even when it is not convenient. Even when you really don't feel like being, I had a mailman really upset me. I'm going to confess one of my sins now. I don't have a mailbox at our shop. I would get our mail at home because the snowplow keeps taking out our mailbox. We haven't had any winters last couple times. I never got around putting it back up. I don't need a mailbox. It just stays full of junk mail until I'm sent to the house. Mailman drives up my house in front of the shop. And he holds up an envelope, waves it, and I look out the door. So I walk out. It's one of those priority mail things. We need a bunch of certain little pieces of hardware to finish a job we're on. Plantation shutters. Those little things you hook everything in. I'd ordered from California. And he was waving on me. I walked out. And I said, "You got something for me?" He says, "Yeah, I do. I think so. You little redwood shop?" I said, "Yeah." And he held up, not about this far away. He says, "I can't give this to you." I said, "Why not?" "It's because you don't have a box. I cannot deliver to you without a box." And I said, "You're kidding." I said, "No, I'm not." And I said, "Well, change the address on it and send it to where I'm supposed to get mail." He says, I can't address your mail." I'm thinking, no, neither hail nor sleet nor... I mean, the thing's this far away. I'm thinking, he wants me to grab that thing so he can pull it back. And doggone, I'm not going to do that. I'm afraid I lost my temper. I just lost it. I haven't been that mad since I was a boy. And I just stopped off. And I didn't get it. They sent it all the way back to California. And I had told them, "Send it UPS, not USPS. And I finally got it like a week and a half later. I had a hard time getting over that. It was a week before I decided that I was actually in the wrong. Granted, the man could have done it, just chose not to because what I'm required to. But my reaction has to be seen from a different prism. It is a witness of Christ. Was I a good witness for Christ? Was I peaceable or gentle? I was not. I tend to hurt people's feelings a lot. I know that. I don't mean to. You know, I say things in a hurry. There's a lady who's sitting here, as a matter of fact, in this room. I hurt her feelings carelessly, but given the impression I didn't think she was doing something we wanted to do. And I didn't realize it for about a day till my wife told me. And I have to humble myself and go apologize. Well, of course, the problem is once you hurt somebody's feelings, my granddad said, you say more than 5 seconds, you stay back in a lifetime. You know, it's always there. So I try to guard what I say. And I try to make sure and apologize as quick as I can. Apology is cheap. It doesn't cost you anything. It's the right thing to do. Do it. But I'm no man, men who will tell their children, a man does not lie, does not apologize, and never admits he's wrong. That's the way that they raise their children. All right. We have one more verse. I've got a couple more here I want to look at. Matthew 22:36-40. Remember I said the Greeks were loyal to themselves first, and then their family, and then maybe their city. Who is Matthew 22:36-40? John.
Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment, and a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets.
It's easy to read it and say in church, but to put it in practice a little bit differently. As a very young child, we lived in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And it was not like it is now, by the way. Myrtle Beach, when I was that age, had 3 paved roads. You had Ocean Boulevard, Kings Highway, Oak Street, then Little River Road was dirt, and that was the edge of town. And then the Polk International Paper Company's trees started and went on for 20 miles. That's what it's like when I was a boy. They had the Myrtle Beach Air Force Base that was reopened in the 50s, I think, sometime. But anyhow, my mom and daddy probably knew between the two of them, everybody that lived in the town of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, including the people at the air base, because land was so cheap, there were little houses where the officers, when they were there on deployment, they built a house. We started out living in woods. There'd be a house built here, then a month later here, and a month later here. And a lot of these airmen were married to Oriental wives and had children that looked different than everybody else. So this was a thing for a lot of the parents that I was like kindergarten, first grade, something like that. That was a problem for them. You know, what do you do? Do you let your kids play? This is back not too many years after the colored and white signs were very common. I can just barely remember at the bus station having seen the colored and the white entrances and the drinking fountains. You know, I can just barely remember that. What do you do? Do you let the children come into your house to use the bathroom if they're playing in your yard? Because they're different. Do we talk to just the husband and not the wife? This was South Carolina, keep in mind, about 1964.
It was North Carolina, too.
Well, yeah, Greensboro especially, you're right. Well, Christ didn't say love your neighbor just if they look like you or act like you, if they speak the same language, if they're born in the right place. I have an instinctual mistrust of anybody from New York City. I'm not making a joke, I do. Because all my life, my grandmother instilled that in me. She'd be watching a game show on TV. She loved this when I was a little boy. And she'd say, look at that Yankee there. They're going to give that game to him. Yeah. Or, you be careful now. Those Yankees that run that place will cheat you. Now, that's why I was taught growing up. So when Pastor Bill was all the time asking me to come up to help the New York Gospel Missions in New York City, It is very difficult for me to love my neighbor. Now, of course, the incident in the Gospels after Christ had made that statement, well, it was a parable that he used to explain this in the Gospel. The guy that was going down the road to Jericho, and thieves fell on him and beat him up, left him in there. He's like, all beat up and dying. Along came who? The Levite. Along came the priest who went around him. Who was the person that was the good neighbor to him? The despised Samaritan. He's the one that went and picked him up, bound him up to the end, gave him in. Our instructions don't change over the years. Whether it would be Cretans or whether it be North Carolinians, we are to be humble. We are to be peaceable with all men. We are to be obedient. We are to obey not just God, but the people He's put in authority over us. Even if I don't like what Pastor Greg proposes from the pulpit or in the boardroom, I have to obey. I have to agree. Even if Mr. McKay here says something that I would very much like to object to, if he is my deacon, I have to subject myself to his authority. That's not blind. I don't think you have to be automatons. If Gene back there told John to stand up and start quacking like a duck, I don't expect him to actually do that. You wouldn't, would you, John?
No.
Okay. We're using some discernment here. But the point is, we are to displace our personal pride in response to God's commandment to those that we have to obey. Like the child that does not want to take out the trash. You say, take out trash. No. Defies me to my face. I don't want to. Take out trash. No, I won't. So I turn to the other son and say, you take out trash. Yes, I will. Now I go on and do what I'm doing. Well, a child that said no, he wouldn't, comes back down, gets out trash, takes it out, dumps it. Well, a child said he would, stays on the couch playing his video game. Which one obeyed? Of course, this is an analogy of a parable that Christ actually said. Obedience is doing the thing that you don't necessarily want to do. Humbleness is putting someone else's desires ahead of yours. Being peaceable is not giving in to anger. Anybody else have any comments, any commentaries? Questions, observations, anecdotes? Yes, Don.
I think Paul uses terms over and over again, like peace. We're to obey the authorities so that we might have peaceable lives.
Mm-hmm.
But he also throws in there usually grace, which is something among Christians and for Christians, but it's for use in the kinds of situations you're saying. If I had more grace, I'd be more forgiving, I'd be more understanding. But the grace that comes to the Christian through the Spirit of God is something which is unique, and the world doesn't understand, but they'll always accept.
Anybody else? Gene, you look like you're dying to raise your hand and say something profound. You're overdue, as a matter of fact.
I'm just dying, but not raising. You know, I will make this one comment to you. It's interesting that among the Cretans, it's like Titus was trying to keep them focused on their main job of living for Christ and evangelizing Crete. And in the first verse of that chapter, he talks about their duties and what they're to do. And in the second part of it, he talks about what they used to be like. I think it's in verse 3. And then when he gets in the following verses, he talks about their salvation. But he never commanded them to major on changing their culture or changing their society, or trying to get everybody to abide by Christian rules. He always kept them focused on the main thing of a Christian, and that's to live for Christ and to evangelize. And it's like he's saying, people will do what we would pray for them to do if we conduct ourselves correctly. And it's like I think Don was saying, they admire, although sometimes haltingly, but they admire grace in a Christian's life. If we obey magistrates, and if we humble ourselves, and if we tell the truth and live like a Christian, they may not do it themselves, but they certainly respect when a Christian does what he's supposed to do.
Well said. Well, you're dismissed. Thank you.